Accession number 20812, Reel 3.
Ron Han, Reel 3.
Yes, well, all I could see in this field, which was on a sort of, must have been a glimmer of moonlight, otherwise I would have saw nothing, was a large field, but there was a notice in there. And in that notice was HD Cemetery, which meant our divisional cemetery. The battle hadn't started. That was a virgin field. But that's marvellous. They've got the cemetery ready anyway. And this is one of the quirks that you, when you look back, see how... But most of war, it was like that. These things, people say, what this? When you tell them you don't know, they just don't realise that things just pass by, they're down the line, and you sometimes you go through a town in the darkness, you don't even know you've been there, you know. But anyway, this, as I said, we passed this field. I actually think I've been back there, but I didn't recognise it, where it was. Then we started this attack on the Reichswald, and as I say, it was pretty horrific as far as life and limb was concerned. Of course, what made it worse, as far as the man on the ground was concerned, we could not use artillery, not accurately anyway, nor air cover, not in the forest, because by the time we got in there, for what, say a day and a half in, we weren't sure who was who. So it more or less became getting towards the hand in hand stuff. And as I say, we progressed the first day, and I was leading my battalion, my platoon was leading the battalion, and we dug in the first night in the forest, and where I took one or two prisoners. But the next day we went further, and we went to cut a road, and oh my God, the fire, machine gun fire was terrific. And anyway, we crossed the road, and I think I probably got about no more than about 20 men over, but you know, because they were firing onto this main road with machine guns, we sort of scrambled across and took quite a few Germans prisoner, because they threw their rifles up in the air when they seen us in amongst them. And there was an officer with me, can't remember who it was now, but asked if I would have a go to try and get out back across the road, because we had flame-throwing tanks further back, and if we could get a contact, they could come and winkle the Germans that were pinning us down. We were in a small perimeter, you know, and there we were just lying on the ground, we had no trenches, and they were more or less surrounding us, firing. Anyway, I thought, well, if I get up, I'm going to get shot. If I stop down here, we'll probably all get killed. So I then said, I'll have a go and try and get out, try and get across, back across the road. And I made a dash for it, but I didn't get far. I saw the German sort of head in the, among the bushes, and he fired what I was told later was a Panzerfaust, which is the equivalent of our bazooka, which is a small anti-tank thing for firing at tanks to punish the steel. And fortunately, it landed about, I think, 3 or 4 feet in front of me, and which, of course, blew, I think, a lot of the guts out of my leg, out of the lower part of the left leg. And I was filled with shrapnel in the other leg and hands and in my face. And, of course, that was it. I was down. We had, I found out later, one stretcher bearer came and they stopped firing. The Germans didn't fire at all at him, let him go. And he came across from the over the road and he dropped down beside me. I remember him. He said, "I don't know how the hell you are going to get out, because I'm the only stretcher bearer left." Anyway, there was about 6 Germans in the trenches. He got 2 of them to come and pick me up and carry me out on the stretcher down into our lines. And the Germans didn't fire nothing at all. They let us go out. And they carried me down, I would think, probably 200 or 300 yards. And they put me down behind the hedge. And I can remember there was a medical officer working. A lot of these fellas lying against the hedge as I was. And he was going along taping people up and whatever, doing what he could. And he came to me and... he must have put splints on it and done what he could. And then they put me on a jeep, and I was then taken to a casualty clearance station, which was a Canadian casualty clearance station near Nijmegen. I remember we did get a bit of fire on the jeep on the way down, on the way to the clearance station. I can remember when they put me into this big tent. It was a tent, casualty clearance station, big marquee. I can remember them taking me and putting me in there, and I could just recollect them with big scissors cutting my uniform off, because it was soaking blood, of course. And they then put a cotton wool pad over my face, mouth and nose, and poured, I presume, with ether onto the pad and out. The next I knew was the next morning, I was lying in a pajama jacket, and there was a large paper stuck to it. And I remember sort of looking at it, and had it on the paper, it was evacuate to the UK within 24 hours. Of course, I read it and that's it. It didn't register to me. and then they got me away onto a Dakota from airstrip, I don't know where from, but they flew me back to Swindon, RAF Hospital in Swindon. I think I was there for a few days. They didn't do anything. And then they pushed me onto an ambulance train to Cardiff. And I went to the hospital there. There they had done all the medical necessary, chopped the leg off, and they told me later when I was leaving that I had been very, very lucky. And when I got there, one of the senior sister said, I did not expect you live through the night. So this I said, oh well, I'm still here anyway. Then of course, now we're now what, 55 years later, and I'm still here. So that's it.
When you were in the Reichswald on that day, do you remember the date that it was?
I think when I was wounded, the date was either the 12th or 13th of February 1945. I may be wrong, but I'm quite almost positive that it was the 12th. In fact, I think it was the 12th. But it could have been a little bit either way. But I'm almost sure it was the 12th of February.
What time of day was it?
It would be... looking at the daylight, it must have been... By the time they got me out, carried back in the doctor, it was still daylight. And it was just February... So it would be dark in Holland by five anyway. So it must have been when I was hit. Actually, hit must have been. Couldn't have been no later than 3 o'clock, I would think.
What rank did you have at the time?
Sergeant.
So were you a platoon sergeant?
Yes.
What was your platoon at the time?
Let's see. Still again, I was C Company, and I think it was 14 or 16, I'm not sure. But it was C Company.
Do you remember any of the corporals you had at the time?
I can't remember the names now, because there were... There's so many changes. Now, I'm almost sure, I wouldn't stake my life on it, but I'm almost sure that of C Company, I was just about the last man left of the original company. Because as the war progressed, I was keep saying when I lost more men, I lost another one, I'd say, by God, when mine comes, it's going to be a great one. And I can't remember, but I used to often think, God, I'm only one left nearly now, you know. So I can remember quite a few platoon officers I had, which then became company commander, McNabb. He remembers a lieutenant. McNabb, when he was my platoon commander, then I became company commander, and then he became a major, but he was killed.
Did you think it was reasonable of that officer to ask you to try to go back to get help?
Oh, yes, well, he said, would you have a go? He wouldn't more or less try and lay down an order, because if he had laid down an order, and I didn't want the order, ignored him, you know. Because it was, on the face of it, wasn't reasonable. But I thought at the time, I said, I might get through. And I thought, oh, we're all going to lie here. They'll destroy us lying here, sort of thing. And how the rest got on after I left, I don't know. I couldn't find anybody. As that paper tells you, I went there, when I went back, there was 200 men from the division, but quite a few Camerons, and none of them could remember being at that time when I was wounded.
Do you think you could have crawled all the way back?
No. As I remember it, as I say, it was late afternoon, I think, when I tried to move, the foot never moved. I went into my body. Oh, my God. So I... Stuck where I was.
I mean, when you first got the request to go back, instead of standing up, Could you have?
Oh, no, no. No, no, it was... Oh, it was a main, a sort of main road going right through a forest, large forest, very big, you know. And that main road, you could never, you had to just get over. Actually, I haven't said yet, but when I crossed that road, all my ammunition was in pouches on your belt as you carry them. And when I was scrambling over the road, all the ammunition fell out onto the road. So I'm standing with a Sten gun, but I had no ammunition. I got there, I said, I've got no ammunition, but I'm not going on that road to get it either.
Were you in much pain from the wounds?
Not that I can remember. I was... Wait a minute. The officer that was there, he came and gave me a shot of morphia within a few minutes of it happening. That's it, I remember right. I forget about that, but I remember, I'm damn sure, you know, what you see in hospitals about hygiene and all this. That man gave me that shot of morphine straight through the uniform with a needle, straight through the uniform and into my leg. But it must have done the job, because I can't remember being and having a sort of agony.
Were you satisfied with the medical treatment you got?
Well, you can't do anything about any medical treatment you get abroad in the field during hostilities. You can't. You can't criticize it at all. Whatever they are, they've just got to do what they can. And the pressure on them was terrible. And they haven't got the medicines or the facilities to give a proper thing, you know. But in the RAF hospital at Swindon, they didn't do much at all, as far as I know. As I say, I was pretty dozened, actually, at the time. But they had done nothing, because when I was taken to Cardiff, and they took me down to the theatre, I think the second day I was there, and they whipped the leg straight off, and the surgeon that done it came to see me the next day and said, I'm sorry, he said, because we always like to warn people that we are going to take it off. He says, so what normally do, he said, we send them back to the ward, let them come to and tell them we'll have to take that off. So then they come down and have it. But he says, in your case, he says, I couldn't, I hadn't time, he said. He says, if I left it on till the next day, it might have been too late for you. So I said, I had to take it off. Well, fair enough, if you had to take it off, that's fair enough. Because I didn't know when the nurse done my bed the next morning or the afternoon, or whenever I came round, she pulled the bedclothes back, and I remember her, only a young girl, I said, oh my God, my foot's sore. She says, is it? And she pulled the clothes and I looked. I said, it's not there. She said, did you not know? I says, no. Oh, she said, I'm terribly sorry. There again, I was done. But I presume for the best.
How do you feel now about having served in 5th Camerons in the Second World War?
I don't think I would change anything. I wouldn't like to go through that again. I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy to go through any of that, especially what we had in Holland with the weather conditions, plus the danger. No one in their right mind wants anything to do with that again. But if you had to come by some strange quirk of fate, I would definitely prefer to go into sort of Cameron's in that atmosphere.
Have you had any after effects from your experiences?
No, it gradually sort of, you calm down and it gradually becomes memories, you know. No, it doesn't really affect me. It didn't, after the first sickening feeling, after it was off, you know, makes you sick a bit. But after that, I said, well, that's it. Can't cry over spilt milk.